Today, we're talking to Emmy-nominated producer-director Matthew Hendershot, right here on No Rest for the Weekend. Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend, the show where we go behind the scenes and talk to the creators behind independent film and series. I'm Jason Godby, and with me today is the man behind well-rounded Hoodlum Productions, my good friend Matthew Hendershot. Welcome, Matthew.
Thanks, Jason. How's it going?
It's going good, man. It's nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you, too.
Usually don't get to see you unless we're working together.
Yeah, right? Getting jobs done.
I wanted to open up because you're a guy who... You're like the modern-day filmmaker. You're a do-it-yourselfer. You do audio. You do camera. You've directed. There's not many things that you don't do. I don't know if you've ever written a script. Do you write as well?
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're a one-man band a lot of the times, and a lot of the projects that you know we worked on together, you're doing like 15 different jobs. So I wanted to ask you right off the bat, this is becoming a prevailing wind in filmmaking, or has been since the digital age.
And it's super annoying.
Yeah, I mean, I once had somebody, I was working with an actor, and she asked me, she was like, she thought it was like some deep psychological reason. She was like, did you do this because, you know, like you were abandoned as a child, or, you know, I was like.
That's pretty good, though.
I was like, no, it's just because I can't find other people to help me, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and with you, though, I mean, you went to school for engineering.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You came to this pretty organically. Like, you were already kind of technical.
Yeah.
But did you do a lot of these things because out of a sense of desire or just necessity?
A lot of it comes from a necessity standpoint. I mean, I got into audio production out of desire. It's what I enjoyed doing in school. I was a musician as well, and so it followed that as far as I could, and was literally working in a production studio in like the sound recording room and doing, you know, small audiobook projects or audio for video or like little scores, or sometimes a band would come in and we would record. But it was like the hits were few and far between. And at one point I was just asked, they were like, hey, we're really behind on a deadline. We need to like log and transfer some tapes. Can you do this? Like, can we just show you how to do it? We just need manpower. And so I started doing it and then messed around in Final Cut with the clips. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This functions the same way Logic functions or the same way Pro Tools functions. So started putting some stuff together. And it was basically just a situation where it was a very small production house. And they were just, hey, you have a knack for this. Can you do more of this? We need you to fill this role. And it was an opportunity for me to get work and to do work in between music stuff that was going on. So we just kept doing it. And then it was like, hey, the cameraman called in sick. If we give you a crash course on how to run this camera, do you think you can, you know, I think my first video production project was to shoot a parade in Scottsdale, Arizona. And they were like, oh, here's a Canon XL1. Like, here's zoom, here's focus. Good luck. And that was the situation. And it was just running around shooting all this stuff. And I've always been the type of, like, I kind of get obsessive and meticulous about things when I'm
no.
doing me. Yeah, no. But so, you know, when I was doing this, I remember being in this parade and, like, getting, like, trying to, this guy's walking a horse down the street, and I'm like, I don't like it, and run a half a block up the way and reset and like take a knee and try and reframe the shot to get this, like, oh, I want him to do this. And this is just stuff I was doing because I didn't have any idea at the time. And then they reviewed all the footage afterwards and they were like, wow, this is actually some really usable and really great stuff. So we're going to start paying you to do more camera operation stuff. And I started as a B cam on a lot of live stuff and then moved up to where I was pulling shots and calling shots and setting lights and doing DP work for them. And it was just the more I did it and the more it allowed me to do.
And this is over how many years?
Oh, this is over like 6 months. It was literally like a Shark Tank feeding situation where, because I was done with school and just talking like the early aughts, like 02, 03, 04, 05. And then by 2005, I was field producing a television show that I was shooting and editing, and it came out weekly, and we were traveling around and, you know, setups on Thursday, shoot Friday, Saturday, Sunday, edit Monday, Tuesday, publish on Wednesday.
I was saying to the other day, I had a woman here. She was a, her name is Jenny Paul, and she was, she's a producer and an actress. And I was saying how, like, some of the three most important words, it's like, we used to say in theater, it was safety first. And then the next three were like, get over it. And then, but the third one, which I came to, the third three word saying is figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, and oh, yeah. I felt like that's the, there's situations I worked on where it's always like, I don't know how to do this. Well, figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, and just, and that was you.
Oh, that's been me my entire career.
And when did you feel like you had it figured it out? Or did you, or do you still feel like you're figuring it out?
No, I'm every day figuring new stuff out. And you kind of have to maintain that. Like, it's been the biggest boon of all of my career to just say yes when someone's like, oh, can you do X? I'm like, yeah, oh, yeah. And then turn around and be like, okay, I got to figure out how to do that now.
I've done the same thing myself. I remember I had a boss tell me one time, he was a saxophone player.
Oh, yeah.
His teacher asked him, he said, well, how do you know if you're, he said, how do you know if you're a tenor saxophone player or a baritone saxophone player? And he said, I don't know, man, I really like tenor, but baritone is cool too. He's like, you idiot. If they call you up and say, are you a baritone
you
saxophone?
Say yes.
Like, yeah. You say that.
Ray, if someone asks you, if you're a god, you say yes. No, that, you know, it's super important to be able to challenge yourself in that way. Obviously, I'm not suggesting that, like, I would go jump off of a crazy cliff of video production if I didn't feel even remotely comfortable to it. But the world progresses so much, and technology progresses so much, and everything's changing so rapidly, and everybody's got their own pathways into doing it, that you just really close the door to so many opportunities if you talk yourself out of a project. And being able to go into it with an open mind, you know, the first TV show, when I was doing the iSports TV thing, that was like the small production house that I was working for got bought by a bigger production company for the specific purpose of making this show. And to have it all work out to where I didn't just lose my job, they were like, oh, yeah, if anyone talks to you, you just tell them you're a field producer. And I'm like, I have no idea what that means at this point in my life.
No, but you are one.
At that point. And I'm just like, yeah, I'm a field producer. And turns out what that means is you're the guy who goes out and gets it done. And it's like, if that means you're behind the camera or stepping in front of the camera or putting a camera on a tripod and then going around to the front and doing your own breaks and all that, and then just running and editing that and delivering that, you know, as long as you're doing good work and you have an eye for detail that you can make sure that you're keeping your own standard of quality met and on par, and you're, you know, not dragging your feet and you're go-getter, like, that's how it happened. That's what led me to every single step of the next step in my entire career.
I remember a friend of ours, or a mutual friend of ours, our friend Vinny.
Oh, yeah.
He was a field producer like that as well, and he was running...
Segment producer for CBS.
Right, and he was running NBC, I think it was. So he was doing, like, he would literally, like, go shoot a show in the morning, it would be on that afternoon.
Yeah.
So he was running out, camera, doing sound with whoever the talent was in front, and then taking the footage, getting back, and throwing it together, build the
every
segment,
day.
Boom, every day.
Every day.
And
you want to get good, you force yourself to do something like that every
day. I mean, I found even for myself to get better at shooting, I do a lot of videos for my own Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, go out and shoot, go out and shoot, go out and shoot. And, you know, the more you do it, and then you're also, not only are you shooting, but you're getting a better eye for shots. You're getting, your editing becomes much faster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're getting a feel for music and, like, how that goes with things. But I think what we're saying here, and, you know... And it's a sort of a double-edged sword, because, like, when I talked to Alan Lewis Rickman, we were talking about acting, and he said, know what your superpower is. Like, know what you're really, really good at, and market yourself as that thing.
Yeah.
But on the other end of production, it feels like you have to be something of a generalist now. You can't just do one. Like, we have another friend, our friend Nicola, who's a DP, and, like, that's what he does. But, you know, now it's like, can you... can you get jobs that way? Can you make a living that way? Unless you do everything else.
Yeah.
Or maybe you just have to be just a dynamite DP.
No, I mean, if I could go back and, like, restart, knowing, it's a weird way to put it, but, like, knowing where I'm at now and knowing what I'm doing now. Because, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I thought I would be in a recording studio, like, producing records for bands at this point in time. I didn't have any idea that I would be, you know, directing TV shows or whatever. And if I could go back, I think I would try to be more specialized and also just not diversify myself so much, because you get bogged down in it a lot, you know, like I'm running over.
Do you feel like because you can do all these things now that you have to do all these things?
Well, and that's a big part of it too. It's really hard to shop certain aspects of it and certain roles and responsibilities out to people and then get it back and think to yourself, oh man, I could have done that so much faster and so much better if I had just done it myself. So it's its own curse, right? Because, you know, being an editor, it's just like, oh yeah, I'm not going to really hire an editor because I'll just do it. But then you get into that loop of just like the projects tend to take forever because you have to edit it, you're doing the audio, and you can really get lost in your own
track. I mean, you have to learn how to let go at some point.
Yeah, you definitely
have to be
do.
Like, all right, and you know, one
thing, and having good teammates and people you can rely on is
right
crucial for that kind of
and,
thing.
And it's funny because, you know, you and I have worked in different situations together where, like, you've worked for me and I've worked for you, and it's like you you know, I feel like you are at this point, maybe you weren't always, but you're a good delegator. And you go, okay, Jason, you got this. Tell me when you have something.
Yeah.
And you trust me enough to put the cut together or whatever it is.
Right.
Depending on, I mean, it probably depends on the project, because I'm sure there's some things where you're just like, you know what? I know how this needs to be done,
right,
so I'm going to do it. But you can't. You physically can't do all that stuff. So
learning to trust other people. Well, and it's good too, because you get perspective from it. So you get to see through someone else's eyes a project that you've lived with or that you've created. I get this a lot with the TV show, right? When we go and do that, I have to hire crew. I have to hire, you know, I can't direct the show on set and run all the cameras. So hiring a couple of camera operators and a DP, and then being able to communicate with him, you know, it would be so much easier if we had modular brains, right? So where I could be like, oh, this here, I'm going to take this portion out of my brain that knows exactly what I want it to look like and put it into your head. But at
you need
the
like the Tony Stark robots from Age of Ultron.
Download
and just like do the, you know, put Jarvis and everything and everyone.
Yeah, a little piece of your consciousness into somebody else. But the piece of it that works out is, you know, if you know that you're working with people that you respect and that you have a lot of trust in, and you like their work and you like their style, then you can sort of let go of the control elements and be like, look, this is what I'm looking for. Go get it for me. I trust you. And then a lot of times you'll see things back that you're like, oh, I didn't think about it exactly that way. Like, I had an idea for the shot, but the way you executed it, it's different from what I thought, but I actually like it the different way.
Yeah, and you have to be accepting of that. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, it's a collaborative medium. I mean, it's great that you can do all these things, but you can't do them all at once. I have the same thing. Like, I do a lot of jobs, but, you know, when I'm directing and I have the luxury of having a DP.
Oh, man, it's beautiful.
I'm like, great. You know, like you do your thing, but I don't know if you have the same criteria I do, but my criteria is like you have to be better than me at whatever job I'm giving you. So if it's somebody who's shooting, then it's, you know, I'll get our friend Patrick and he'll shoot it for me, and I'll be like, okay, he's a better DP than I am. Go get it. You know, but like, if you're not better than me at it, you know, Chris is.
It's a very baited ego question there.
Yeah, but I'm not that great. I'm technical enough. You're more technical. I would say you're more technical than I am. But you know, but then yeah, you do, and sometimes you have to try out new people,
yep,
and it works out or it doesn't.
Yep.
Anyway, You mentioned the series, the TV series that you're doing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Songcraft Presents.
Songcraft Presents.
Let's use my ham-handed segue and get into that.
Nice. I like that. I like how you did that.
I'm getting better at this whole thing. Questioning thing. So tell me about its origin story and the different incarnations of it and where it's at now.
So we had. We're approached by Ben Arthur and a couple of the producers and the owners of Dubway Studios here in New York City. And they had had an idea where they wanted to do in-studio songwriting type stuff. And I got involved very early on and we were like, listen, what if we make this into like a series? And it's really funny to say this, but it's like, if you've ever seen Ace of Cakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen a number of cake shows.
Or, like, The Mind of a Chef, or, like, all this cake baking. It always comes back to the cake baking shows, or, like, Iron Chef in a way, to where it's like, okay, so each episode you're presented with this challenge, and then at the end of the episode you have to pay off the challenge, whatever. And we're like, well, how do you translate that into the world of creative songwriting? And, you know, Ben Arthur is a great, accomplished singer-songwriter, pretty well-known guy, and... we're like, all right, well, what if it's a situation to where we put Ben Arthur in the studio with another artist, maybe he's met, maybe he hasn't met, and they write a song together.
In how much time are we talking here?
It's like a day. Like,
okay,
like so they, one day in the studio. And in fact, we found out initially it was this whole thing of like, wow, that's going to be really hard to do. Apparently it's not that hard to do. And we got it down to the point where we were having micro sessions at South by Southwest, where we were doing this in like 3 hours.
Wow.
To where, like, yeah, band comes in, they sit, they write, we record it, and then cut the video at the end. And it's like, it's a 3 hour session for like a 2.5 minute YouTube video.
I remember we did one. One of the ones I worked on was with, I want to say, John D.
Oh, John D. Graham. Yeah. It was fantastic. With his son, William Harris.
And, you know, he was talking at the end of it. He was like, man, that was exhilarating. He's like, we just wrote a good song in like 90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
It is pretty cool.
And I was kind of shocked. I remember the first you guys had gotten like backed up on editing and you gave me one of the episodes. And I was like, okay, what's this going to be like? Because, like, you know, you and I play music. We mm-hmm. play music together. I write songs. I know how laborious it can be at times. And I was like, what the hell are they going to do? Like in an hour or whatever.
Yeah.
And the stuff they got was, I was like, yeah. I mean, that John D. Graham song is still on my iPod, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. We've had so many good people that we've worked with on the show and so much good music performed. And it's really a testament to the creative ability of Ben Arthur and to the creative ability of the guests that we've been fortunate enough to have on the show. And like, I give Ben a ton of credit because as somebody who writes songs, it's super hard for me to not, like, interject from even behind the camera as this is going on. And he's so good about doing that thing about letting go and having faith in the guests to be creative and to pull something off that.
Yeah, he's just got this Zen Buddhist sort of.
Yeah, and he had to work on it. It's really cool to talk to him about it. We've had so many conversations where he had to really work on his ability to let that stuff go mm-hmm. and to not have like a control and an ownership. And he really does approach it now with a, hey, let's see what happens and I'll contribute what I can. But he explains it as himself as, my job in the show is to exude the calm that allows all this stuff to happen and to just continue to keep the ball rolling. And then at the end of it, I mean, now the show's evolved quite a bit. So
right. So that was the first incarnation of it.
Right.
And then
we did it all in studio. And then we were going to South By and shooting these like one-off.
You did like a Songs on the Road as well.
Right. So we got a big major corporate underwriter.
Right.
That caught onto the show. And we did a half season of the show for Ford Motor Company. And we did it. It was called Songs of the Road, which was Songcraft Presents Songs of the Road was the variant. And these were all road trip songs. So we got in a car, happened to be a Ford car. How convenient. I mean, that's how branded content kind of works.
Yep.
Picked people up from one location or another and then transported them to a second location. We tried to tie in a couple of stops and historical spots along the way. And those were sort of the touchstones of the experience, right?
And are these guys writing songs while they're like while you're driving?
Yeah, some of that.
You know,
typically we would pick them up, they would meet in the morning, and then we'd go somewhere, have a cup of coffee, and then like set up in a location. We'd have these nice, great locations that we would scout in advance, and it would be like, oh, we're going to take you to this historical location or this location with some significance, and we have a couple hours so you guys can hang out here and do your thing. And they would talk about, oh, I've been thinking about this for a song, or I have this little idea or this little nugget of a melody or a guitar piece or something that it's been rattling around, and give them a little opportunity to sort of get into it, and then put them in the car. And they're like, all right, we're in the car, we're going to drive, you know, an hour and 45 minutes, and they're just riding in the back, and they're like, oh, what about this for an idea for the second verse? And, oh, what about this for an idea for a hook? And what if it goes in this direction? And then we'd stop in another location and do that. I think the pilot episode for Songs of the Road featured Lara Lynn, who is now quite popular. She was on the show Nashville.
Oh,
and,
okay.
We picked her up in Nashville, and we drove to Memphis.
Oh, that's a nice drive.
Yeah, it's a bit of a haul.
Yeah.
Especially when you're trying to produce a TV show about the trip.
And how are you shooting this stuff? Like, just for the techno geeks out there, like, you got GoPros all over the place in these cars?
No. We.
Or is it just Matt in the front seat with a camera?
Two cameras. Matt in the front seat with two cameras. Very real. We had picked up a pair of Blackmagic Pocket cinema cameras.
Little
small body guys. And I remember I bought like three different Rails kits, like on the go type shooter Rails kits, and was able to fabricate. I was able to remove the headrest out of the back of the seat, and then using 12
millimeter. Unbeknownst to the Ford Motor Company, I would imagine. Unbeknownst to the Ford Motor
Company. Oh, don't tell them this. Yeah. This is totally against safety rules. But it removed the back of the headrest, and it's got little, like, 12-millimeter receiver pins. So I had this Rails kit that locked into the back of the car.
Oh, my God.
Into the headrest of the car, where the headrest would be. And I had two of these Blackmagic Micros, and we put little pancake lenses on them so that they were nice wide-angle throws. But I was able to get, like, a wide two-shot and then a hero cutaway of the guest in the driver's seat. And it had, like, this much
nice
range of motion. So you watch these, there's all these ride-along shots where it's like, but I was able to avoid crappy GoPro compression and like that 180-degree wide.
That's like incarnation number two.
Right, the Songs of the Road, incarnation number two, and now we've just launched number three.
And the pilot you just did, what, this year? Earlier this year? Last year?
Earlier this year.
And
it just aired recently.
On PBS.
On PBS.
Okay. Now, this is partly the guys from Dubway, partly Ben Arthur, but also a lot of this is your brainchild in terms of, you know, structuring the show, writing the show.
Yeah. The partner, we all, it's really great because the partnership is five people that put it all together. And everybody brings something so very unique to the table and has their own interests and focus. But this one particularly, because we weren't sort of beholden to any brand sponsorship or anything like that, I really got to interject a lot of what I wanted to have happen in the show.
Right. You don't have shots of cars and things like that you need to deal with. Yeah.
Right. And then it's always been for me, we've always sort of looked to try and find these like keystone elements for the show that it hinges on. And with the Songs of the Road version, like the road trip was the experience. So now that we're sort of away from riding around in cars, we were looking for that new touchstone of like, how do we tie this into a space or a location or an event or something? And we came across this great historical story. And we were able to do our homework and do our diligence, and we found the whole thing is this historical documentary about a guy by the name of Emmett Miller. And Emmett Miller is like, should probably be in the Country Music Hall of Fame and probably never will be in the Country Music Hall of Fame. And it's a very interesting situation with him. And so,
and you guys go into this in the show.
Yeah, we do go into it a lot in the show. I mean, I can go into it now if you want.
We're running out of time.
Sure,
but
We do go into great detail in the show as to why this character is a little bit dubious in history, and we try and wrestle with that. And then in the course of wrestling with that, we also have this great creative, and it's a very referential. The song that gets created is very referential to mm-hmm. the story. We visit several locations, beautiful theater in Macon, Georgia.
And this is the plan going forward, to find these different historical stories and write songs about them. That sounds awesome.
I hope so.
And for you being, being a musician and a filmmaker, this is sort of a marriage of things that you love.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely beautiful to be a part of something that creates good art in so many different mediums. It's like we're writing a great song, and it's cool because we put them on stage at the end of the day. It's like, yeah, you got to write it this morning because we're going to be in the studio this afternoon. Oh, and you got to get the studio work done because we're putting you on stage and you're performing the song tonight to a live audience.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. Right?
That sounds awesome.
And so you get to see all this play out, and then in this case, when we're dealing with these historical elements, like, you're wrestling with some pretty heavy subject matter and dealing with the history of Macon, Georgia and what the South was like. You know, it's so important to American music, but it's not the easiest thing to talk about.
Yeah, but I think that's the hook for the show.
Yeah, that was our idea going in. And that was something that I really wanted to have translate in this version of the show in particular is, the songwriting element is ever present, but I just want to tell great stories. And I wanted to tell this great historical story and make people think about it. And it's not apologist in any way, and it's not trying to gloss anything over. It's saying that it's really time for us to take a hard look at who we were and how we're gonna live with that.
That's awesome. Anyway, I got to wrap up, but thank you so much for coming. Matt, where can people find you on the web?
I'm really bad at all that web stuff. If you want to contact me directly, wellroundedhoodlum@gmail.com. You can just write to me. There is a wellroundedhoodlum.com. I wouldn't recommend going there.
Okay. And Songcraft can be found.
Songcraftpresents.com. You can see all the past web content that we have out. You can get 10-minute versions of the episodes and glimpses of what we're up to. It's on PBS, so anyone who has a local PBS affiliate near them that they enjoy, you can call them up and you can say, hey, I'd like for you guys to air Songcraft Presents, and they can do that.
Awesome. Thanks for coming, and thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more episodes of this show, you can check out our website, btrp.nyc/podcast. You can also find us here on the web, on YouTube and iTunes and Stitcher and all those places that you hear and listen to podcasts. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.